Best worst case scenario podcast.
Sounds like a bad Fijian drink.
I love how everything's a cocktail to you, man. Like, you just want to drink.
I sound like an alcoholic. Like,
Yogg-Sothoth, dark god from out of this universe. I want to drink that.
Yeah, it's all started with Graham Hancock.
And his purpose is similar to that of Cthulhu, right?
I think it's a little different. He's definitely much higher up on the ranks.
Than Cthulhu?
Yeah.
Damn.
Cthulhu's a little guy compared to him.
What?
Yeah. Yogg-Sothoth is an outer god. And Cthulhu is considered a great old one.
He's just a grandpa, is what you're telling me.
Just an old one. And Yogg-Sothoth is a sauce.
And he's an outer
Yogg-Sothoth one. Yogg-Sothoth is an ancient one.
That Yasa-sauce, man.
Yasa-sauce.
He's that's, an ancient one?
That's not what you call him, but he's way older. He's an outer god, which means he's locked outside of our universe.
What? Yeah. Another universe?
He's a locked outside of the universe.
Holy crap.
He's not even.
Because I knew H.P. Lovecraft, like, talked about stuff in a very atheistic, like scientific way, but I didn't know he talked about multiple universes.
Well, I don't think he does.
That blows my mind.
I think that's as far as he thought was outside of our universe.
Dana and I did something else now.
What are you talking about? We're still on the Yogg guy.
No, we're not.
Oh, yeah. I got a bunch of Yogg.
I know. We'll get back to it. We'll get back to it. Don't you worry.
Yogg your memory.
But after our whole Monte Cristo exploit, Dana and I, we delved deep into a certain story by H.P. Lovecraft. And that story is the Dunwich Horror. Did you know anything about this story before we started to delve into it?
What do you mean?
Like, did you know it existed? Because I read a lot of H.P. Lovecraft stuff, and I had never read this story, which it's a pretty big one, so I was kind of surprised.
I thought I had read it, but I was confused because I didn't recognize a lot of it as I was listening to the audiobook. And I was still trying to figure out what story I was fucking thinking of.
So we got interested in this story.
The horror.
The horror. And we not only did we read the story.
We wanted some more.
But we watched the 1970 Dunwich Horror.
The comedy, yeah.
By, I don't know who directed it, but 1970, Dean Stockwell and Sandra Dee.
Thank God you remembered his name.
Who were both like kind of big people back in the day. Big as in actors, not big bodies.
Just big fake facial hair.
Yeah, Dean Stockwell is the main antagonist. We'll get into that. But Wilbur Whately, and he's got this mustache and this curly hair, and he's got these eyes that hypnotize.
He's got lady killer eyes.
He does.
He'll like make any girl swoon, I think. And just collapse at the knees.
And he does. He makes Sandra Dee swoon.
Spoon?
Swoon. And maybe so swoon. Honestly, he's a little creepy.
But the way he would make his eyes, brows, was kind of funny.
It was.
Like he went a little too Jim Carrey. Like
they constantly broke the fourth wall and he just like mad dogged the camera and like raised his eyebrows.
I think he could have been half as subtle as he was and it would have been a little better, but he wouldn't really. Like he was trying to get the camera to see what he was doing.
Right.
Like making it obvious that he was using his eyes like a vampire to control her.
Yeah, which the director probably told him. He's like, it's all in the eyes, man.
Which that's not mentioned in the book, is it? That was a movie decision.
No. A lot of liberties were taken with the movie.
Yeah, they made that shit up.
As did they make Sandra Dee up in her character because there was no...
Sandra Dee.
There was no girl getting lost and kidnapped and... Yeah, and other things that I don't even want to say, but in the story, in the movie, a lot of other things happened that didn't happen in the book. So, what is the Dunwich Whore about? Or Dunwich, as they say.
The Dunwich. Yeah, that's what really fucking ticked me off was somebody said Dunwich.
Say it, man. Say it proud.
And it's Dunwich, like sandwich.
Well, I think if
there's nothing to elude that H.P. Lovecraft would say Dunwich.
I think if you're British, you just say things wrong, you know? You take the actual pronunciation and then you just fucking ruin it. Like aluminum, how they say that.
What's that?
Aluminum.
Oh.
I know. It's like you can't even fucking recognize that.
I thought you were trying to say a Harry Potter spell. I seriously did.
Honestly. But no, it's just straight up aluminum.
Wait, you just made a new one up. Aluminum.
Aluminum, man. I can't talk. Christ. Here I am roasting our brothers across the pond, and I can't even fucking talk.
Yeah, the Dunwich Whore. I don't know. It's your classic horror story, you know? You got a crazy old guy who screams into the abyss. Or, I mean, not the abyss, just out in public. He probably doesn't have pants on. And he claims to know crazy stuff about the world and that some giant thing is going to come kill everybody. And then you got, you know, some creepy offspring and them trying to bring back a Kraken God level being to destroy or wreak havoc on the earth.
Yeah.
Because they love that dark shit. Because their life sucks so fucking bad they want the end of the world.
Right. And these people come from a place called Dunwich. And it is a small town in New England.
Yeah, the smallest fucking town you could think of.
Right, it's pretty small. And by all accounts, it's pretty, like, nice. Climate-wise. No, just let me finish. It's pretty nice, like, scenic-wise. Like, if you were to just look at it in pictures, you'd be like, that's a nice place right there. But when you actually go there and you see these old people in their houses that are caving in, looking at you from their doorsteps with the crazy fucking hilltop stones and the creepy ass woods around that surround the place, it's different.
It's a small town in the country. Not a lot going on. That's the gist.
Yeah. And in this story, it's
a fight for humankind.
No different. And H.P. Lovecraft says this about the town. 2 centuries ago, when talk of witch blood, Satan worship, and strange forest presences was not laughed at, it was the custom to give reasons for avoiding the locality. Since the Dunwich Horror of 1928 was hushed up by those who had the town's and the world's welfare at heart, people shun it without knowing exactly why. Perhaps one reason, though it cannot apply to uninformed strangers, is that the natives are now repellently decadent, having gone far along that path of retrogression so common in many New England backwaters. They have come to form a race by themselves with well-defined mental and physical stigmata of degeneracy and inbreeding.
It sounds sketchy, doesn't it? It sounds like a town you stop for gas and keep going, if they even have a gas station.
And the people, they do. The people even, it's like, it sounds like the very genetic pool that makes up this town is
pool is a certain nasty word.
Well, it is here because it ain't flowing. It's a
cesspool.
It's still water, and those people are going downhill.
Yeah.
But it's not just the people that make this town creepy. The scenery of it, that's what tips you off to what else is happening in this town. And H.P. Lovecraft talks about these hills. The Miskatonic Ridge.
The hills have eyes.
The hills have ridges, and they have these stones on top of them, which isn't as catchy a title, I admit, as having eyes. But they're like Indian burial places, ritual places.
So they buried Indians up there?
No. I just meant like as an umbrella term for like some stonework that was done a long time ago. That could have been done by the Indians, but maybe it wasn't.
You're full of bullshit.
I'm just.
You sound like Graham Hancock.
BS, man. But
ancient aliens is where you belong.
Ancient astronaut theorists.
That's where you belong.
Speculate.
You could get on that show, no problem. Just yeah. send them this reel.
So, anyways, there's stones on top of these hilltops and like altars around them. Circles of stones. Think Stonehenge, but smaller scale.
Yeah. It looks a little sacrificial, doesn't it?
It does. And
it's where they make the Dunwich sandwich.
It's really the best. HP talks about what's going on that is these presences, right? And he says this. Though old legends speak of unhallowed rites and conclaves of Indians, amidst which they called forbidden shapes of shadow. That makes no sense. Forbidden shapes of shadow. Like, what the fuck, man?
Did you write this?
This is what he literally wrote.
Okay.
Let's keep this
in here because this is funny, man.
Can't even read this. Okay. Amidst which they called forbidden shapes of shadow out of the great rounded hills and made wild orgiastic prayers that were answered by loud crackings and rumblings from the ground below. In 1747, the Reverend Abijah Hoadley, newly come to the Congregational Church at Dunwich Village, preached a memorable sermon on the close presence of Satan and his imps, in which he said,
"It must be allowed that these blasphemies of an infernal train of demons are matters of too common knowledge to be denied. Cursed voices of Azazel and Buzrael and Beelzebub and Belial being heard now from underground by above a score of credible witnesses now living. I, myself, did not more than a fortnight ago catch a very plain discourse of evil powers in the hill behind my house, wherein there were a rattling and a rolling, groaning and screeching and a hissing, such as no things of this earth could raise up, and which must needs have come up from the caves that only black magic can discover, and only the devil or not."
That dude's services must be a lot of fun.
That was rough.
Yeah.
But so is H.P. Lovecraft's writing. Burn. Burn.
Oh my gosh. I like his work, man, but I gotta say the dialogue is like, oh my gosh, what was he thinking, man? The way people talk and the things they say.
Well, that just goes to show how lonely that guy was, because he didn't know what normal dialogue was. So he's so by himself all the time. I don't think he really had many friends except for his mom.
Yeah, but at least he's famous now, man. So as this stuff is kind of going on, you have in the township of Dunwich, in a large, it says, partly inhabited farmhouse set against a hillside.
What does that mean, partly inhabited?
It means like...
like there's pigs living like in there,
means like you spend
too?
Weekends there, or like...
it's a summer home?
It's a summer home.
For pigs and cows?
It's partly inhabited, Dana.
They like go graze the mountainside and then they come back for their little vacation.
Don't question it.
The snowbirds.
Pigs got to have homes and vacation homes too, man.
Actual birds use it as their summer home.
Yeah. So about 4 miles from the village and a mile and a half from any other dwelling, Wilbur Whately was born at 5 a.m. on Sunday, the 2nd of February, 1913.
Doesn't he sound like a cute little pig?
Wilbur
Whately.
Yeah.
It sounds like a little pig boy. Who's like half pig, half boy. He's got a little tail.
It's funny you say that actually, because he's described as being rather goatish.
That sounds satanic. H.P. Lovecraft dropping some Satan stuff references. Yeah.
And during that birth, there were noises in the hills. And all the dogs in the countryside were all freaking out and barking. So they didn't like what was going down or out.
Out of the womb?
Out of his mom, which his mom was, as HP put it, she was one of the decadent Whately's, a somewhat deformed, unattractive albino woman of 35 living with an aged and half insane father, old Mr. Whately. Yeah, I guess just
I don't think H.P. Lovecraft liked women, did he?
just the albino ones. But she had a half-insane father about whom the most frightful tales of wizardry had been whispered in his youth.
Yeah.
Wow. And she was a lone creature given to wandering amidst thunderstorms in the hills and trying to read the great odorous books which her father had inherited through 2 centuries of Whateley's.
Jesus. That was all what he said.
Right that there. Was her education, was those dark or those dank
he books. Called her a lone creature?
Yeah.
I feel like this HP guy never met a woman, talked to a woman ever. He just observed them.
Well, we don't know.
Look at that albino creature over there. What is she doing? What is she thinking?
It is rather roast material right there.
Think about it. Has he wrote any good qualities of any woman in any of his stories? They've all been like bitches or monsters, I think.
You know, that's actually a good point. If you guys in the comments, if you know of any women that he talks about in a positive way, let me know, because right now I'm having trouble. Yeah. So that's going creepy. Going back to Wilbur, her son, because she was the mom. What was her name?
Lavinia.
Lavinia, which is an interesting name. But one thing we should say is that her son, Wilbur, was born under rather mysterious circumstances.
Wilbur! What are the strange circumstances?
Well, no father, for one.
Yeah, that's because he was in the pig pen.
Jeez. You mean the goat pen?
No, pig pen. His father was half pig. Like Wilbur.
Jeez, man. I just picture a little pig with some little trousers.
No, kind of cute.
Little overalls.
I know.
Yeah, with the no father being around, it's like Dunwich is a really small town and not very many people pass through it. So for her to just suddenly become pregnant and have a baby, it's just...
Yeah, like how many dudes are there for her to sleep around with that are actually like half decent looking?
Well, let's not even talk about that.
That have all their teeth.
No one. Exactly. Like it's bad.
So she got really drunk. Ended up over at Billy Bob's.
Yeah.
Half horseman.
The horseman. So
hung like one.
So that was like something the townsfolk talked about. And when Wilbur was born, his dad went into town after a while, and like he was kind of rambling because he's old at this point and he's got
dementia,
right? And this is what he told the townsfolk about his son.
I don't care what folks think of Lavinny's boy. Look like his pa, he wouldn't look like nothing you expect. You needn't think, the only folks is the folks hereabouts. Lavinny's read some and has seen some things the most of you only tell about.
That was good. I shouldn't have laughed.
I calculate here, man is as good a husband as you. You can find the side of the Hodgebury. And if you knowed as much about the hills as I do, you wouldn't ask no better church wedding nor hearn. Let me tell you something. Someday you folks will hear a child of Lavinny's a calling. It's father name on the top of old Sentinel Hill.
we should really transcribe these for listeners, because I'd
say that's my best work.
Well, so I can read.
That's like my best voice acting,
right, guys? There. I can read the text, and I still don't know what he's saying. I just don't know. Do you know what he's saying?
He's pretty much saying that he had a pretty cool son, and they're all gonna wish
that he's gonna look different.
They're all gonna wish. He invited him over for barbecue sometime.
Yeah, you'll regret it.
He's Irish too in this for some reason.
Yeah, and so from the early days that Wilbur's born, his growth is crazy. Like within 3 months, he's
juicing and on steroids.
Within 3 months, he's attained the size of and the muscular power of like someone who's above 1 year old, right?
Yeah.
And by the time he's only like 7 months old, he's walking around. He's a prodigy.
Because he's super fucking smart and he's super fucking tall. That makes him a prodigy because he's tall.
And The interesting thing is the dogs, they hated him.
That's because dogs are man's best friend and he ain't a man.
Hey, man. That's hurtful. Dogs don't really like me.
He's a demon.
Saying I ain't a man.
He's a goat fucking demon.
Well, I ain't that, but...
He's a pig spanking demon, man.
Pig spanking demon?
Yeah.
That's the worst kind of demon. Yeah.
For a decade, the annals of the Whateleys sink indistinguishably into the general life of a morbid community used to their queer ways and hardened to their May Eve and All Hallow orgies. Twice a year, they would light fires on the top of Sentinel Hill, at which times the mountain rumblings would recur with greater and greater violence. While at all seasons, there were strange and portentous doings at the lonely farmhouse. In the course of time, callers professed to hear sounds in the sealed upper story, even when all the family were downstairs.
Yeah, weirder and weirder things started to happen. And people also noticed that the livestock that the Whateleys had were getting these weird lesions on them, like almost like incision marks, and they all looked thin and malnourished.
Yeah, they found handprints on the back of pig's butt.
Yeah, yeah, no, not they didn't, but
from all that pig spanking.
It's funny though, even though it's really wrong. In 1924, that was when old Whateley died, and as the doctor came and he was like helping him, and Wilbur was there with his mom Lavinia, and they were around his dad, and his dad was just kooky, out of his mind, talking, rambling, and his last words were thus.
More space, Willie. More space soon. He grows, and that grows faster. It'll be ready to serve you soon, boy. Open up the gates to Yogg-Sothoth with the long chant that you'll find on page 751 of the complete edition. And then put a match to the prison. Fire from earth can't burn it nohow.
The whippoorwills didn't get his soul.
It's the whippoorwills, I think.
Whippoorwills. Whatever they're called, they're birds that try to get your soul in the book. And
yeah, and they don't get a damn soul in the whole book.
I know.
That's what pissed me off the most. It's like, oh, finally they're going to fucking sing and be happy and laugh. And
yeah. So Will, or old Whateley, dies. He gives his son that weird cryptic advice. And then here he is, 4 years old, and he looks like a fucking grown-ass man with hair on his face. And also, he kept growing taller and taller. Like, he's like 4 years old, and he's got hair everywhere. And
Yeah, the NBA is looking into him now.
So,
they're on the Miskatonic.
He's tall as hell, right?
He just went to Miskatonic.
And I don't know if you understood Dana's last words as old Whateley and what he was saying, but he pretty much told his son, hey, there's this book. I need you to go look at 751 of this book.
751.
That book that he's talking about.
Real cool.
Becomes really important, and it is called the Necronomicon.
And on page 751, there's a pig dressed in a sailor's outfit.
What? Yeah, why?
I don't know.
Just because.
Just what Whateley wanted him to say.
He would. Whateley would want that. The library of Miskatonic University of Arkham had failed to get him the loan of a book he desperately wanted. So at length he set out in person, shabby, dirty, bearded, and uncouth of dialect, to consult the copy at Miskatonic, which was the nearest to him geographically, almost 8 feet tall, and carrying a cheap new valise from Osborne's general store. This dark and goatish gargoyle appeared one day in Arkham in quest of the dreaded volume kept under lock and key at the college library. The hideous Necronomicon of the mad Arab Abdul Alhazred, in Olas Wormius Latin version, as printed in Spain in the 17th century.
There's no way H.P. Lovecraft read any of his own writing out loud.
It was tough saying that. Yeah. I don't know if you guys will hear all the outtakes.
Tough listening to that, man.
Well, thanks, man.
Isn't that interesting? Arkham. Is that where Batman got their idea for Arkham Asylum?
I don't know if he made it for Batman.
No. Batman took it from H.P.
I know. I don't know if Batman took it from his stuff, but...
Arkham Asylum, I bet they did.
So at that library that I mentioned previously. So he goes to this library. He's looking for this book.
He's a librarian.
And Henry, he meets at that library in...
Craigslist. He says he's 5'10", good looking.
Yeah, he's catfishing.
He's catfishing a pig there.
I don't know why he would lie. And why are pigs on Tinder, man? That's what I want to know.
Me too. Spam. That's what you call spam.
Pig mail. Come on, man. Just let the pigs go. So, Henry Armitage is the librarian. And he's the guy who helps Wilbur, or doesn't help him, I should say. Because Wilbur comes there and he's like, hey, I need that Necronomicon. You got it?
He's looking for Yogg-Sothoth, the outer god. Where am I going to go with this?
I don't know, man.
I just know I had more to say.
Well, tell us, who is this Yogg-Sothoth?
You pronounce his name right, man.
Huh?
Yogg-Sothoth.
It's not Yogg-Sothoth.
That's what I heard one guy say on a video, and he sounded like he knew a lot.
Okay, well, YouTube. Tell us about him.
He's the most dangerous thing. And he can't get to us because H.P. Lovecraft made it that way. He's locked outside of our universe. He's a cosmic entity. He's pretty much like a star super villain.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah. And I'm going to read this little thing, which is right from the Dunwich. The Dunwich.
Sounds like a restaurant. Just want to go get a sandwich, man. Just want to go get a tasty ass.
You want the Yogg-Sothoth stew? No, that would be so sweet if there was an H.P. Lovecraft restaurant.
Dude, we should make the first one. We'll just put squid in everything.
And then you got like the Dunwich sandwich, and it's like got
Dunwich.
And you got some pig in there, some ham.
Some Ark ham. Yeah.
And then you got like at the Fries of Madness or something.
The Fries of Madness.
And they're just like dumped with like crazy garlic
sauce. And for
sauce.
The descriptions of the food, it's always like, dark I can't shit. Describe the crazy flavor. Uh-huh. It escapes my mind to even attempt to describe the flavor in this Dunwich.
Just know it's terrifyingly good.
It's terrifyingly good. That's the slogan for it.
So, Yogg-Sothoth. Well, he looks like a big octopus thing. And he's got, like, socks on his tentacles. No,
I don't even know what to say, man. I wish HP could answer our
Lovecraft
burning...
Lovecraft logic. There's a passage that hints at the cosmic nature of Yogg-Sothoth. By pleasing this deity... could bring powerful or forbidden knowledge. And supposedly, in order to please Yogg-Sothoth, a human sacrifice is required. Yogg-Sothoth is the offspring of the Nameless Mist. And the Nameless Mist comes from Azathoth, who's a dark outer god, known as the Supreme Lord and Creator of all things.
Wow.
There are 39 outer gods, and that's not even including the older ones or the great older ones.
Yeah, so he tells him, he's like, this is what I'm looking for. Can you give me the goods? And Armitage, the librarian, he's looking over Wilbur's shoulder as he's translating the Necronomicon page by page, and he reads this.
The old ones were... The old ones are, and the old ones shall be. Not in the spaces we know, but between them. They walk serene and primal, undimensioned, and to us unseen. Yogg-Sothoth knows the gate. Yogg-Sothoth is the gate. Yogg-Sothoth is the key and guardian of the gate. Past, present, future. All are one in Yog-Sothoth. He knows where the old ones broke through of old, and where they shall break through again. He knows where they have trod Earth's fields, and where they still tread them, and why no one can behold them as they tread. By their smell can men sometimes know them near, but of their semblance can no man know, saving only in the features of those they have begotten on mankind. And of those are there many sorts, differing in likeness from man's truest Eidolon to that shape without sight or substance, which is them. They walk unseen and foul in lonely places, where the words have been spoken and the rites howled through at their seasons. The wind gibbers with their voices, and the earth mutters with their consciousness. They bend the forest and crush the city, yet may not forest or city behold the hand that smites. Kadath in the cold waste hath known them, and what man knows Kadath? The ice desert of the south and the sunken isles of ocean hold stones whereon their seal is engraven. But who hath seen the deep frozen city or the sealed tower, long garlanded with seaweed and barnacles? Great Cthulhu is their cousin, yet he can spy them only dimly. Ia Shub Nigrath. As a foulness shall ye know them. Their hand is at your throats, yet ye see them not, and their habitation is even one with your guarded threshold. Yog-Sothoth is the key to the gate, whereby the spheres meet. Man rules now where they ruled once. They shall soon rule where man rules now. After summer is winter, and after winter summer, they wait patient and potent, for here shall they reign again.
Damn, that's chilling. Damn. So, naturally, Armitage is a little freaked out. He's like, what the hell is this goaty boy doing? He must be trying to call in this Yog-Sothoth.
Yeah, there you go.
Guy. So he leaves, and during the weeks that follow, Armitage is gathering data on Wilbur Waitley and the formless presences around Dunwich, and he's trying to understand what's happening. Early in August, the half-expected outcome developed, and in the small hours of the third, Dr. Armitage was awakened suddenly by the wild, fierce cries of the savage watchdog on the college campus. So he rushes over there.
Uh-huh.
And what he finds is that someone has broken into the college museum or books where they keep the books. I guess that's the library.
Yeah.
Someone has broken in, and he hears the watchdog screaming, and he goes in there and he sees.
First, he thinks it's a pig.
No. He doesn't know what to think. Just that the dog's going crazy and someone's broken in there.
There's a squealing.
But after he does go in there, he sees, to his horror, what it actually is. The thing that lay half bent on its side in a fetid pool of greenish yellow ichor and tarry stickiness was almost 9 feet tall. And the dog had torn off all the clothing and some of the skin. It was not quite dead, but twitched silently and spasmodically while its chest heaved in monstrous unison with the mad piping of the expectant whippoorwills outside. It would be trite and not wholly accurate to say that no human pen could describe it. The back was piebald with yellow and black and dimly suggested
piebald. What the fuck does piebald mean?
Yeah, that Wilbur guy, right? He sounds fucking disgusting.
Well, he was.
But yeah.
He's like dead now.
Sounds like H.P. Lovecraft saw him firsthand.
It does sound like that. Like, how does HP even think of that much detail about some unknown thing?
That's what I'm wondering. Maybe he was able to visualize, like, Nikola Tesla, but he used it for writing.
Or maybe he was an alien, and he just wrote about his own anatomy.
Yeah, he knew the anatomy. Everything, that would be hilarious if everything he said was true.
So after
Jesus Christ
that happened, you know, he only grabbed, like, Armitage only grabbed like two professors to look at it, and as they watched it, it disappeared and disintegrated into, like, nothing, into a mush, because he wasn't human, really. He was half human.
Porridge. I thought he was half pig.
He's half whatever you want him to be, Dana.
I actually had a nice smoky bacon smell when he was dying.
The whole campus smelled like some nice charred, like, crispy bacon.
Who's cooking? Mm.
So, after Wilbur's death, Armitage was given Wilbur's diary, which was written in some kind of code. So we couldn't figure out at first.
Yeah, it was called Pig Latin.
Pig Latin. Oh, man. That's funny, eh? So during this whole ordeal at the campus, the thing locked up at the Whateleys escaped.
It was in the dark of September 9th that the horror broke loose. The hill noises had been very pronounced during the evening, and dogs barked frantically all night. Early risers on the 10th noticed a peculiar stench in the air. About 7 o'clock, Luther Brown, the hired boy at George Corey's, between Cold Spring Glen and the village, rushed, frenziedly, back from his morning trip to 10 Acre Meadow with the cows.
Up there, in the road beyond the glen, Miss Corey, there's something been there. It smells like thunder, and all the bushes and little trees is pushed back from the road like they'd a house been moved along of it. And that ain't the worst, neither. There's prints in the road, Miss Corey. Great round prints as big as barrel heads, all sunk down deep like an elephant head been long. All sunk down deep like an elephant head had been long. Only they's a sight more nor 4 feet could make. I looked at one or two afore I'd run, and I see everyone was covered with lines spreading out from one place, like as if a big palm leaf fans, twick three times as big as they is, had a been pounded down into the rut. And the smell was awful, like what is around Wizard Whateley's old house.
Rot, bro.
God damn, that's hard to do.
The rot. It's also harder to understand with an accent too, right? But it's fucking hard.
I think I just sounded like a surfer, bro.
Up there in the rot, bro. Down the glen, bro.
The surfing's real good out there, bro.
I know, you sounded good. I liked it. I liked it way more than how I probably would have done it. The rot.
Yeah. So during that.
Damn, that was fucking creepy and funny at the same time. I was like laughing my ass off and stuff.
Yeah. So meanwhile, as that happened, and they're seeing signs that something bit made huge footprints and tore trees and whatever the hell that guy said happened, Armitage broke the code of Wilbur's diary, and for several days he tirelessly read through it.
Saturday afternoon, he felt able to go over to the library and summon Rice and Morgan for a conference. And the rest of that day and evening, the three men tortured their brains in the wildest speculation and the most desperate debate. Strange and terrible books were drawn voluminously from the stacked shelves and from secure places of storage, and diagrams and formulae were copied with feverish haste and in bewildering abundance.
Damn, they sound like a couple of Sherlock Holmes in there, man.
Holmeses, hanging out with their homies.
So he's seeing, like, they're making the connections, like Charlie Day, and they're like, Dunwich is here.
Well,
there's a portal here. They're trying to bring
deciphering Whateley's journal, right?
Well,
which is full of pig Latin. And I think they're slowly discovering that there's a giant mutant pig on the loose.
No, it's not a pig, but they're discovering what he was trying to do and what might be out there. So, armed with that information, Armitage feels it's his duty to protect the town of Dunwich.
Armitage and the army too.
So he's like 73, but he gets his friend Rice and whatever the hell his science name is, his science friend's name, and he takes him to Dunwich to find the thing that is out there making these marks
on the road,
because he knows what might happen if he doesn't stop it.
Yeah, it's gonna take out everybody's farm and leave everybody goat and pigless.
Well, not just that, it's going to eat the people, because this thing, whatever it is, it devours houses and people inside of them, and it eats cattle and livestock, and it pushes over trees. It sounds like a big asshole.
Yeah, and it's loud too, and it makes sounds.
Yeah, but Armitage knows that it's invisible, so with his friends, they grab like rifles and some powder.
It's like the size of a couple elephants running around.
As big as a house.
Bigger.
Well, I can't say. That's all bullshit anyway. but he grabs them, the science guys. They grab a gun and some powder that they plan to throw over this thing to see it. Because Armitage, he finds in the Necronomicon that Wilbur wrote some spells that he can say, and he can send this thing back to the Nether Realm where it comes from.
Yeah, send that pig back.
So when they get there, him and those three guys, they meet up with the townsfolk.
Yeah.
And they're like, show me where this thing has fucked you guys up. And mm-hmm. so they show him. They take him around and
they take turns, and
Armitage, he tells them his plan.
They take turns checking their credentials.
Yeah, what does that mean? Is that an innuendo?
I just made it one.
I think it is
checking their credentials in the barn,
in the burn,
in the barn right next to the road. We get a little road rash there.
But they're looking for where the creature is, and eventually one of them spies with the telescope. He sees it walking along.
An invisible thing.
Well, you can't see it, but he sees the markings of it walking along, pushing over trees, like stamping its feet. So Armitage takes his three science friends, and they go to find it.
Bunch of nerds.
They go to like meet it head on, and the village folk,
like, they're dumbasses.
It would seem that way, yeah.
Scientist,
but
man.
He feels it's his duty because he doesn't want hell on Earth. So he takes the scientist out to meet it head on while he shouts some magic words at it. And
Wingardium Leviosa. Expecto Patronum.
You shall not pass.
And none of the spells are working.
What happens is the townsfolk are too afraid, so they sit at a distance looking through a telescope. And as soon as Armitage's friend releases the powder to reveal the shape, the guy who's holding the telescope, he freaks out.
All made of squirming ropes, whole thing sort of shaped like a hen's egg, bigger than anything. Nothing solid about it. All like jelly and made all separate wriggling ropes pushed close together. Great bulging eyes all over it. 10 or 20 miles all along the sides, the biggest stovepipes and all the tossing and the opening and shutting, all gray with kind of blue or purple rings, and God in heaven, that a half face on top.
Yeah, so that's a villager's take on what he's seen. And from what I can glean from that, dialect of English, if you can call it that.
No.
Is that the thing is like a jellyfish with lots of wavy tentacle arms, and it's got a bunch of bulging eyes all over it with mouths and like, yeah, I guess it is hard to describe, but
yeah, it is.
It's,
you don't got a big dictionary.
It's now. Got a big face on top,
which is a human face,
which is a face that looks like Wilbur, actually.
A human face on the top, which is a giant. That's a big face, though, which is creepy. It's like Toy Story.
So Armitage, he goes up there and he starts chanting, and then HP writes. Suddenly, the sunshine seemed to lessen without the intervention of any discernible cloud. It was a very peculiar phenomenon and was plainly marked by all. A rumbling sound seemed brewing beneath the hills, mixed strangely with a concordant rumbling which clearly came from the sky. Lightning flashed aloft, and the wondering crowd looked in vain for the portents of storm. The chanting of the men from Arkham now became unmistakable, and Wheeler saw through the glass that they were all raising their arms in the rhythmic incantation. From some farmhouse, far away, came the frantic barking of dogs. Without warning came those deep, cracked, raucous vocal sounds which will never leave the memory of the stricken group who heard them. Not from any human throat were they born, for the organs of man can yield no such acoustic perversions. Rather would one have said they came from the pit itself, had not their source been so unmistakably the altar stone on the peak. It is almost erroneous to call them sounds at all, since so much of their ghastly, infrabass timbre spoke of dim seats of consciousness and terror far subtler than the ear.
So scary, man.
Yeah, it's like a party up there, man. You got lights, you got loud noises, you got old men shouting.
Yeah, it sounds like a real party going on.
And it works because Armitage does his magic. He shouts those incantations and it sends it back. And meanwhile, it's shouting and yelling its dad's name, Yog-Sothoth and shit. And all the townspeople are watching, like pissing their pants through telescopes. And eventually, Armitage and his friends, they come back. They walk slowly back. And the townsfolk are asking them tons of questions. And Armitage just nods his head and he looks at him and he says,
"It was mostly a kind of force that doesn't belong in our part of space. A kind of force that acts and grows and shapes itself by other laws than those of our sort of nature. We have no business calling in such things from outside. And only very wicked people and very wicked cults ever try to. There was some of it in Wilbur Whately himself, enough to make a devil and a precocious monster of him, and to make his passing out a pretty terrible sight. I'm going to burn his accursed diary, and if you men are wise, you'll dynamite that altar stone up there and pull down all the rings of standing stones on the other hills. Things like that brought down the beings those Whately's were so fond of, the beings they were going to let in tangibly to wipe out the human race and drag the earth off to some nameless place for some nameless purpose. But as to this thing we've just sent back, the Whately's raised it for a terrible part in the doings that were to come. It grew fast and big, from the same reason that Wilbur grew fast and big. But it beat him, because it had a greater share of the outsideness in it. You needn't ask how Wilbur called it out of the air. He didn't call it out. It was his twin brother. But it looked more like the father than he did."
I that means that Lavinia, his mom, when she gave birth to him, she had another child, a twin brother, and that was what they kept locked away in the attic and that they fed the horses and cattle to.
John C. Reilly.
So that's a crazy twist on that.
Yeah, Yog-Sothoth impregnated fucking Lavinia.
It was Yog-Sothoth? He did it?
Pretty much. And then she gave birth to John C. Reilly. Which, actually the twins.
Yeah, that's wild. And the twins, like, or the twin in the room, you couldn't see, it was invisible, and they had to feed it. And that's what his dad was talking about.
Fathomably grotesque, nameless brother who inherited all of Yogg's genes.
That's crazy.
Looked just like his godfather.
So, yeah, they kept that in the attic and they fed it. And that's what his dad was talking about when he said, you have to build, you have to feed it, but don't feed it too fast. And if Wilbur hadn't have died, then it probably wouldn't have escaped. Then he probably would have kept feeding it till it was so big that it would have.
I think their plans were to make it reproduce.
Yeah, because in the movie, in the 1970s movie, it was a lot different where he kidnapped Sandra Dee, that lady.
Yeah, and he was making her his woman.
He was. It was really creepy because I think he even put something in her drink. It was like something to keep her in love with him or something.
There's some fuckery going on. Yeah. It's all his fault. He's a dirty, dirty man.
He's a dirty, dirty man. A goatish, dirty man, that Wilbur. Such an innocent-sounding name. Such a dark man. But, yeah, I would say I really like the story.
The Dunwich Boar. We bore you all?
No, like... You guys should read it because it's, if you like H.P. Lovecraft, and if you don't know if you like H.P. Lovecraft.
And if you like tongue twisters.
Yeah. It's very descriptive. But it is. I'd honestly really recommend it if you like horror stuff and if you are interested in H.P. Lovecraft, because it's like every story is so richly like interwoven in this universe of gods and mythical creatures and ancient ones and...
It's like Stranger Things.
There's so much crossover. Yeah, it is like Stranger Things.
It's probably exactly where they got their inspiration.
Honestly, I think there's a lot of crossover with Stranger Things with the look.
The mind flayer.
Yeah.
The thing's creepy.
And even the upside down is like the interdimensional of H.P. Lovecraft stuff, you know, and the dark shit behind those other dimensions.
Dark shit.
And... If we
entertained you,
or no,
we offended you.
No, I was gonna say, if you guys liked this show, please let us know so that we can do more H.P. Lovecraft stuff. Because yeah. I myself like reading and talking about H.P. Lovecraft because it's super dark and like.
Yeah, let us know what rituals or sacrifices you do.
Maybe don't
in your life.
Maybe don't. I don't know if I want to know
any incantations we should know about. And give us power.
Like open sesame.
Bacon.
What?
I don't know. Bacon.
Well, this has been Mayan.
This is Dana.
And we want to thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of Best Worst Case Scenario Podcast.
BWCS.
We got some more things planned in the future that we're really excited about.
Yeah. So, but right now, we're sort of in a transitional stage. We're moving our HQ to a new location. So, yeah, big changes.
Yeah. Also, make sure to like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube.
Yeah, or rate the show if you're listening on Spotify or Apple or whatever.
And if you guys really enjoyed the show, consider checking out our Patreon where you can become a member and support the mischief happen behind the scenes.
Yeah, make us make more horror stuff. Make us. Donate.
And I'm referring to
subscribe.
The
see
Patreon,
what'll happen.
By the
just,
way.
Just see what happens. Dare you to press that subscribe button.
Yeah.
some pictures of pigs, man. That's what you'll get.
Don't send us. I'll
send you some pictures of pigs in sailors' outfits.
You can't say no to that, folks. Have a stupendously
terrifying,
terrifyingly good night, folks.